Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Hey, it's Kelly Kirsch, Riley Pollock along as well. Today is it's a busy show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Yes, Hockey Central at noon means all hockey for one full hour. Eric Tkachuk coming up at about 12:30. He's our NHL insider. More on the big news out of Seattle. They have a team name. They've got color. They got logos. Now we can start talking about what happens with the expansion draft. What happens with realignment? All that and a bunch of questions with Eric coming up at 12:30. The Flames general manager was on with the guys earlier today. We'll hear Brad Treliving again coming up at about 12:45. But first, let's find out what's happening with the Flames. Let's talk to Lou.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Peter, I'm going to reverse things a little bit. You wanted to talk about the Seattle Kraken towards the end, but I just think I need your Louisism
sure.
on this right off the top. I mean, if I'm a gambling man, I say
yeah.
I say if I said would Lou be down with this name, I would say there you've just booked the presidential suite at the No Chance Motel. Am I right?
I love it. I love it. Here's what I would say. You maybe not the presidential suite, but an executive suite.
Okay.
You know what? And I did some research today, and I looked it up because at first I'm like, what's a Kraken? So it's some form of menacing, mythical
sea creature. Yes.
Sea creature. Now, as much as it's not about the sea creature, and I actually kind of like that concept of it, Kelly, what I would say to you is, for the most part, on names, I like S's. And not for Seattle, but at the end. Like, I've never really been a huge fan of, you know, although it fits, right? A name is a name. And at a certain point in time, I don't need to spend a ton of time, although I love your intro today. It's funnier than Get Out. I prefer S names rather than,
pluralized,
you know, Wilder.
Names, right, Lou?
Yes. Yeah, it's teams, more than one person play. I'm more an S guy when it comes to names. But I will say this. I like the color scheme. I like the logo. I think the jerseys are very, very smart looking. I'm very impressed. Very, very impressed.
I like the way they incorporated the Seattle Space Needle into their anchor yeah. logo. I think that's very, very cool. So, and I'll tell you that market, you've been there, I've been there. You know, people from Calgary, it's a pretty quick flight. All those head offices, all those corporations, that population, big sports fans there. No NBA team right now. A redone arena. I think that will be. That'll be maybe even more popular than Vegas for some Flames fans to go on a road trip.
It's as you know, Kelly, it's an incredible city. I think it's going to set up an interesting division and rivalries. And what will it mean for the Vancouver Canucks? They may end up being the biggest benefactors, and Seattle will be a massive benefactor of having Vancouver to play against on a regular basis. It is. It's a great city. It's a great sports city. I have thoroughly enjoyed my time. I've certainly been to the old Key Arena to do and watch junior games. And in fact, Kelly, Seattle has such a rich hockey history, you know, going all the way back to the Seattle Metropolitans. But, you know, quick story. The old Seattle Center Arena,
yes.
Boss, you had to see it to believe it. So when I was in Regina, and that's where you and I met many years ago, the Key Arena wasn't open for hockey. So the boards were all about 7 feet high, and it was square everywhere, and there was mesh at both ends. And let's put it this way, the type of crowd they had, they were not shy on sauce, so it was quite an introduction to Seattle for me. And in my first year of doing Pats games, the Thunderbirds were a terrific team, led by a gentleman named Peter Nedved, who was a rookie and had 145 points after he came to the Max Midget Tournament and then ended up defecting and played in the Western Hockey League. So, yeah, Seattle has some neat memories for me, for sure.
So that's the Seattle Kraken. It'll be team number 32 in the NHL. That's a couple of years away. We're getting ready for the play-in round of the NHL playoffs, which will start for the Calgary Flames. I guess Tuesday will be the exhibition game. We'll have it for you at 8:30 right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And then coming up a week Saturday, it's game one of the best of five against the Winnipeg Jets. And 1 o'clock practice today. So now we're getting kind of the short strokes and maybe one more scrimmage tomorrow or so, and then it's into the bubble for the guys. What are you looking for in the practice today, Lou?
Well, what's really interesting about today's practice is because of the off day, Kelly, my guess is, and I don't think it's a guess, that yesterday would have very much been spent by the coaching staff and Brad Treleving and his staff as an evaluating day. Not that they don't. They do every single day after every practice, after every situation. But because of the time and because it came after two games and now you're a week and a half in, I think a lot of time yesterday would have been spent evaluating with all the different things that they are looking at. So they weren't quite ready to open the doors when I tried them 10 minutes ago. Maybe they're keeping me out today, and I'm only kidding. But I'm interested in a few things. First of all, is Elias Lindholm back on the ice today? So after a day off and maintenance, you'd certainly hope that he is back out there. I'm very interested in any potential line combinations or line shifts. Does Derek Ryan remain where he was by and large for the inner squad game the other day, or does that change? And Sam Bennett, who's a very, very intriguing player to me as we head into these playoffs, does the team continue to be committed as far as him playing between Lucic and Dubé? My guess is yes. Other things, Kelly, that we can dig into a little bit is, you know, special teams. No Travis Hamonic. Who takes that role? Not so much as far as rounding out the top four. I think we have a great idea there. That's the easy one, Brody and Giordano to start, Anderson and Hanifin. But it lends itself to a lot of different questions. And what you're always looking for, is there change? Is there change? Especially after a full day to truly have a breather and evaluate for the coaching staff and the staff.
Yeah, now they really have to kind of this is where the coaches earn their money, right? Because they have to kind of go with what they've seen and what they know about the guys. And one person that I think we really would like to see something exciting happen in the playoffs, because we like the way he plays in the playoffs. He's gritty. He can and shown in the past that's when he comes to play, is Sam Bennett, and he has been a topic a lot with the fans, with the media. It never stops with Sam, and he's such a great guy. What are you expecting from Sam right now?
Well, I find the moniker that goes with him very interesting, Kelly. A lot of people refer to him as Playoff Sam Bennett. And in so many different ways, especially when you think about right now, that's a great thing. But there is another side to that, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I think there's more to it. I mean, he had that thing around his neck about the highest draft pick and all that kind of stuff. I wonder if that's maybe faded now and he just become a hockey player, just play.
Well, I think it's getting more and more along those lines. But I want you today to listen to a clip, and very closely in regards to Sam after a session and the inner squad game, had this to say about him in the situation that he's about to deliver in.
I think I'm usually given a bigger opportunity in playoffs, and you know, I love to take advantage of that. It's a fun time to play. It's easy to get up for games, and you know, it's my style of game where it's really physical. really emotional, and that's when I'm playing my best.
Yep, that's
and that says it best, Kelly. But there was an interesting part for me, and words, at least to me, they matter. And that clip started with, "I think I get better opportunities in the playoffs."
Yeah. What he probably should have said is, "I earn better opportunities in the playoffs," because that's the deal.
That is the deal, and I love that you went there, because I have truly believed, and we've discussed this before, I think in Sam's case, as he continues to mature and grow, I do. I think he loves this time of year. I think the style of play and the physicality and the emotion, he's a really emotional guy and has performed more than admirably in his 20 games in the playoffs with the Calgary Flames. And here he is again, potentially in a very intriguing, important position at center ice for now, with just over a week to go before game number one of the play-in round against Winnipeg. You know, the maturing process for Sam has been, how do you come to grips with either the ice time, the opportunities that you get? And even to a certain extent, and I'm probably overanalyzing a little bit, but the think part, obviously he's way more confident and he truly feels more valued at this time of year. But the other part comes in exactly what you said, Kelly. You get more opportunities at this time of year, and right now you're even in potentially in a better spot because you have earned that. The hard part for him has been in the regular season, where I think at times he has had difficulty with utilization and why isn't this working? And so, you know, and I'm not being critical. I love this guy.
But that's fair,
And I love this guy at this time of year. And honestly, Kelly, he's still here because of his playoff performances. I'm not sure he would be if he had not been good in those situations.
Yeah, and I think when you think about Sam Bennett in the regular season, you can't say, you know, talk about him without, you know, those penalties. Man, he has been known to take penalties at the wrong time and some of those lazy penalties at times, and that frustrates everybody, the fans, the media, the coaching staff, himself, that kind of stuff. And he just, I guess maybe in the playoffs they call things a little looser, but he's got to watch that, right? You don't want to put the Jets team on the power play anymore than you need to.
Well, emotional people thrive because they're emotional, but sometimes they get hurt, right? Because they're emotional, and there is always with emotional people a very fine line. And, you know, it's crazy when you're in your 50s. I don't know if you look at it this way, Kelly, but I find as every passing year goes on, you look at things a little bit different. Your perspective is a little different. And you know what? You can actually continue to mature and grow in your 50s if you choose to do so. Mm-hmm. So while I say some of the things I do about Sam, you always have to understand that, you know, maturity and what you've had to handle is not easy. And it's not easy in your 50s at times, let alone when you're in your 20s. And that's an important part. But by and large, I'd still take a guy every day of the week that I need to rein in a little bit rather than somebody I have to find some kind of instrument to get them out the door.
Yeah, absolutely. You like that passion. So a little Lou and Kirsch teaching moment for all those guys in their 20s. The things that you care about now, you're not going to care about in the 40s and 50s. That you can take to any bank. There's another Louism.
Right? Louism Day on Dr. and Kelly Instruct People Day. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the back end a little bit. Rasmus Anderson, mm-hmm. He was a project. He worked hard and you know, came over to North America, worked on his conditioning, worked on his off-ice stuff, and has turned into being a really good young defenseman. And now this is the next step in his evolution, his second go at NHL playoffs.
I just think he continues to take step after step. And Kelly, last spring, let's not forget who he started the playoffs playing with. He was with Mark Giordano early in that playoff series against Colorado. Things ended up getting mixed up. But, you know, this again is a young man who's from a hockey family. His dad is a coach. He's a former National Hockey Leaguer. They talk hockey each and every day. He's grown up. He's been around it. And Rasmus had some work to do, and we've talked about it over the years. He had to get himself his, what I call, NHL body wasn't an NHL body, but he's always had an NHL mind. And I think he has an above NHL compete level. And these are the times I truly feel that lend itself to those competitors, those players who are very, very intelligent, and I'm excited to watch him. And because of Travis Hamonic not being in the fold, well, he's for certain a top four participant again. And the pairing of Hanifin and Anderson, if indeed it, I'm sure it's going to start that way with Brody and Giordano. Kelly, in some ways, when you look at this series against the Jets and the type of offensive people that they can throw at you, those two, and remember, they're 22 and 23 years of age, respectively. You know, in Hanifin's case, he's well over 300 games. It seems like there's no way he could actually be the younger of those two guys, but he is. So there's young guys in an incredibly prominent position in their second playoff, and they very much will be determining factors if the Calgary Flames are to beat the Winnipeg Jets, because they're going to have some very, very difficult assignments, and it will be interesting because Hanifin and Hamonic, when they were together, a lot of nights, Kelly, they were as equal in terms of shutting down other teams' best lines. Yeah. So that pairing is unbelievably important when I think ahead to this series. And then the other thing on defense is Erik Gustafsson. There's just no way that I don't see him being in the opening day lineup. And the big reason is his ability to quarterback the power play. Derek Forbort, to this point in time, who I thought was a really nice add. We didn't see a ton of him after the trade deadline just because of the pause, but I thought he was a really, really nice addition. And the other thing about having Travis Hamonic gone, Kelly, is Travis Hamonic and Mark Giordano were your number one penalty killing unit. And that, as we go into the playoffs, how important are special teams and that role? We did see Forbort in that situation in part to replace Travis when either, you know, he or Giordano were not in the lineup. And one player that hasn't been talked about, and I get why, to this point, Michael Stone has been in a role with Oliver Shillington as, you know, the number four pairing, if you will, through all the sessions and all the practices. But in the inner squad games, understanding that the two sides are split, Michael Stone has been killing penalties with Mark Giordano. So
yeah, there are maybe we've forgotten about him a little bit.
About.
Yeah. Maybe it's too. I think people are sort of out of sight, out of mind a little bit with Michael Stone. You might see him, right?
Now, I'm not saying that if I was a betting man, and thank goodness I'm not, because think about how many times I could stay at the presidential suite. Oh, yeah. I'd have another key. It would be in the cleaning room if I was a betting man.
Yeah.
So I'm going with Forbort at this point in time based on his experience, some of the things that he experienced, you know, as a member of the Los Angeles Kings. But when I watch practice today, there's just, if they have some special teams work in practice, who's penalty killing with who, especially on defense, is something that I'm going to be quickly notching in either the old brain or on the old notebook.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we're going to let you go. Tomorrow, another day, and we're getting closer to actual hockey that's live, which is going to be awesome. So that's on Tuesday. So We'll let you enjoy the practice today, and we'll catch up tomorrow, Lou.
Okay, guys. Have a great day.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
It is Hockey Central at noon right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Thanks for tuning in today. We appreciate it. Don't forget, you can check us out online at sportsnet.ca/960. You can listen to us on the Sportsnet mobile app. You can just kind of click on it and listen, and there's our station right there. Or the Radio Player Canada app. Take us with you, especially as we get close to this long weekend. We're going to have so much hockey. It is going to be scary. Good stuff. Looking forward to it. Tomorrow, the Blue Jays home opener. We'll have that one until after 4:30 right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Okay, take a break. What is happening in Seattle? Big, big news, big press conference. We'll get Eric Tkachuk's spin next, our NHL insider on Hockey Central at noon.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Here we go, Kelly Kirsch. We got Riley Pollock today, and coming up at 1 o'clock, it's the arrival of Peter Klein as Pinder and Steinberg gets fired up for you. And then at 2 o'clock, the arrival of Patrick Steinberg right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Tomorrow, Blue Jays baseball for you. Yeah, first pitch from Tampa about 4:30, so we'll have it for you right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. But the big news today, out in Seattle, we have a team name, we have colors, we have logos. The name Kraken was really one of the favorites, and our NHL insider, Eric Tkachuk, joins us. Was that kind of your smart money if you were going to bet on what seemed to be the odds-on favorite for a name for the Seattle NHL team?
Yeah, it was, Kelly, and we talked about it multiple times, including, you know, a few days ago, and then back in January when it looked like the reveal would come much, much earlier. And, it was, you know, and then a bunch of us sort of all, were all reporting the Kraken at the time as the team name. And the only question that – there were two questions. One was that was it leaked so as a kind of a trial balloon? Because sometimes, you know, that might happen, you know, to sort of gauge – what the temperature of the response is to it. And if it's like universally despised, you know, maybe you can rethink it, you know, yeah. Once you actually have the reveal, the colors, the logo and everything else, too late to go back. Right. Yeah. But I think the other thing is that the world was sort of changing at that time. I think there were some questions about trademarks and such that they wanted to fully work out. You know, remember that was an issue with Vegas. You know, they had their big reveal, and then all of a sudden there were some issues with the name Golden Knights, and they ended up, I think, paying some money to.
They wanted to call themselves the Black Knights, didn't they? Originally, wasn't that the name?
Yeah, because of the owner Bill Foley's connection to one of the service academies. Anyway, so I understand why. You don't want to, you know, run into any problem. You vet it and you vet it again and you vet it again. And then, you know, the world turned upside down because of COVID. And that's not a really great time to launch a name and a color logo, because it's critically important to get this step right. And we're not talking about hockey. Now we're talking about the business of hockey and the marketing of a sports team. And when you look at where revenues are generated in this industry right now, You know, it's jersey sales, it's T-shirt sales, it's ball caps, it's all of the paraphernalia that's in the sports shops, that's going to be in all of the, you know, the clothing stores in Seattle. It's really important to get the timing right, and it's important to get the look right, because you want this stuff to fly off the shelves. Kelly, do you remember, because you're old enough, when the San Jose Sharks first came into the league?
It was huge. Them and the Ducks were massive.
It was unbelievable, right? I mean, like normally,
the traditionals, Eric, you know, teal. Are you crazy? That's the stupidest thing ever. Mighty Ducks. That's a kids' movie, and they outsold everybody like 10-1.
And especially like I thought that the Sharks thing, and that sort of almost changed how the marketing of NHL teams worked, because you know, as bad as that team was in its first year, it wasn't very good. They led the league by miles in souvenirs sold and in T-shirts and all those things, because it went beyond the market. Like they you know, obviously in your own market, when you are a new team, you are going to sell merchandise. But it was the league wide, you know, you see stuff in Toronto or you see stuff in Calgary. People love the color. People loved the look of it. They really, really did well by themselves for the first couple of years. And I think everybody took note of the success of the San Jose Sharks in terms of how they launched their logo and their product. And a lot of teams have, you know, since then, I mean, that was, you know, almost 30 years ago now, piggybacked on that process. So that's why it took as long as it did. And you know, let me throw it back to you, because I'm sure you guys have talked about this. I like it, and I like it a lot. Now, I have been monitoring Twitter, very mixed. Over at The Athletic, we had a story posted a couple of hours ago, almost 300 comments in like under 2 hours. That's a lot. That is an awful lot. So people are reacting, and it's kind of all over the map, but more negative than positive, I thought. And I like it. I don't mind, you know, on the record.
Sorry,
being
unabashed. Is it the logo or is it the name that you like?
I like both. I like the whole thing. And believe me, as you know, I try not to go overboard or gush very often about very many things. Because I think I'm like everybody else. You know, sometimes it takes you a little while to warm up to something. You think you look at it and you think, okay, not bad, you know, and then you look at it a little bit more and then eventually it grows on you. Right. So that, you know, so I assume that would be the case. So I'm looking at, you know, the S, but it's sort of shaped like a serpent and there's a serpent eye in there. So I like that, you know, and then I like the color scheme.
Do you like
honestly,
the anchor
I like
the space
about
needle
it.
On it too? I think that's really cool.
I think that's I think the whole package of, you know, the written logo, the secondary logo, the crest on the I like them all. So and I wasn't sure, to be honest, because I think I'm like a lot of people. It takes a little while for something to grow on me. It took the Flaming Sea for sure. It took a long time to grow on me.
Yeah.
But I thought it was good. You know, like I thought it was, but I'm interested in your take. Like, do you like the aesthetics? Is there something about it you don't like?
I thought the name was a little silly, but now that I've got a little bit more of a background, I like when teams pay homage to their city, and you get the Space Needle with the anchor. I think that's really cool, and obviously Seattle being a port city, that's really neat. I think I was thinking about how you talked about, you know, the name of the team, and you float stuff out there to see how the fans will take it. Now let's remember when the Atlanta Thrashers moved back to Winnipeg, they were floating some stuff that True North was thinking that might go, and it was like, nope. Go Jets, go Jets, go. There was no chance they were not going to name that team the Jets. No matter, you know, you're going to, you know, have a clean break and do that. It works the opposite too, I guess, in that situation, Eric.
Sure, and even in the launch in Calgary in 80-81, you know, they took the, you know, Atlanta Flames and they made it the Calgary Flames, and they could have easily changed that, and they considered it, and I think that they were. You know, like you don't do focus groups then like you do now, but I think that they were trying to take the temperature of the public, and you do that through newspaper polls, or that's how you used to do it. And I think enough people like, you know, the Flames and didn't really believe that it needed to be changed. And I think that it as a nickname, it served the city well. Well, again, we did a poll, and I think Kraken came in second. I think it was Sockeyes was actually the you know, the one that most people seem to like the most, and that too would pay tribute to the fishing industry and sort of the, you know, the geographic, you know, position of Seattle in the Pacific Northwest there, and you know, like all of the things you associate with a coastal city. But I think, you know, Kraken is a bit fun, and I think that they're beginning to realize more and more that, you know, like as much as anything, like the hockey probably appeals to adults, but the logos and the t-shirts and the men, you know, like that's sometimes a kid thing.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you, like, if you did a focus group of 8 to 12 year olds, they would love the crack.
Well, and that's the thing. Like if you ask the young guys that work for me now that aren't so young anymore, and you ask them like how they became a Chicago Cubs fan or a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, and I think of all, you know, the different, it's always something about their childhood. My grandfather liked it, or I liked this and it became my thing, right? That's how you grow with, you know, young boys that kind of go, yeah, that's my team now, and I will be with them for a long time, because then they grow up and they continue to be sports fans and keep buying jerseys, and they'll buy them for their kids too, right?
Honestly, Kelly, so in 2000, I'm in Denver for an Avalanche training camp, And I go into a sports store and they're clearing out Bronco stuff. And I got an 8-year-old at home and the prices are too good. So I bring home like a sweater and a ball cap and this and that, mostly because I'm trying to buy stuff on sale. And he has cheered for the Denver Broncos for the next 20 years, because when he was 8 years old, he had a Terrell Davis, I think, was the running back at the time. it is crazy how loyalty builds through the craziest, corniest ways sometimes. So anyway, but you know, getting back to Seattle, I really think they did a good job, and everything. You know, I mean, I go back a long way with Ron Francis, the general manager there, but I see, you know, most of what they're doing is being done very first class in a first class manner. And so ultimately what we will most care about is what the product on the ice will look like. That's still a while. It's still a while to go before they do that. But if they're being this meticulous and detailed with everything else that they're doing, you'd have to think they're going to do a good job on that side too.
Seattle Kraken will be the 32nd team in the National Hockey League. Now we can start talking about some of the other things. They've had some good steps so far. I mean, Ron Francis, very good at what he does. They're going to kind of continue on with, hiring people to, scout. They will be going crazy just like Vegas did when it comes to, the expansion draft and who's going to be available and who they can draft, all that kind of stuff. That's kind of exciting, obviously. Maybe just a couple of things just to they didn't announce it official. Was it official that Seattle is going to be in the Pacific Division and Colorado is going to move to the Central? That is a done deal. It's not going to be. There were some rumors that maybe Edmonton and Calgary would move over and Colorado would be in the Pacific. But any thoughts on that, or what have you heard?
That is my understanding. Although that is my understanding, and I think it's largely because they want to create a rival for Vancouver. I mean, I think that when you look at the way, especially the Pacific Division is, Calgary and Edmonton, obviously natural rivals. You have the three California teams, especially the two based in Los Angeles, natural rivals. And Vancouver was always kind of out there. I mean, they have developed a rivalry with Calgary because of some playoff history in the past. But I think the idea of going into Seattle, well, first of all, that's part of what the commissioner, Gary Bettman, has described as, expanding the footprint to all corners of North America. So the Pacific Northwest obviously was the one glaring hole there. That's why they always wanted to put another team in Seattle. And it creates a great rivalry with Vancouver. So now Vancouver has a city that's, fairly close by. And I think that they will in time, become a terrific regional rival for them. And so, I do think that, it makes a lot of sense to just plunk Seattle in the Pacific and basically boot Arizona out of the the Pacific and then put it into the Central, because Colorado's already in the Central. But it makes sense, right? I mean, and I like the way it sets up now, because now 4 times 8 is 32. That there's just a symmetry to that league. And then it was always my understanding that was what the NHL imagined would be the perfect, component number of teams for the league. That there has been talk about, at some point, because you can make so much money on these expansion franchises, it doesn't make sense to go to 34. If somebody else is going to write a check for $650 million, or maybe the next expansion fee will be $750 million. But I don't, my understanding is that this is the number that they want to settle in at 32, develop 32 stable franchises, 4 times 8. It makes a lot of sense. I think it's the right number.
And then Quebec is the landing spot for a team that maybe can't seem to get it together. Maybe that's what they do.
Well, so that's me waving my Canadian flag, and having it be ignored by the powers that be in the National Hockey League. Because I usually get on that soapbox about once a year about why Quebec deserves a team, and most of the people in Quebec agree with me, and just about everybody else that's in a position to make a decision disagrees. So I think it will be a long time, unfortunately, before Quebec gets a team.
Okay, so that's what's happening. What is the next timeline if you're a fan and you're wondering, is Sam Bennett going to be a Seattle Kraken, or Brent Burns and that sort of? When do we start start doing when you guys do the Athletic, when you're going to start kind of coming up with your
Kelly,
have you done that already?
Four, yeah, I've done four mock drafts, including one a couple of weeks ago. So if no one has read it yet, I'm going to recommend that you go on. In fact, you know what? After we get off the air, I'm going to tweet it out again. So if anybody follows me on Twitter and is interested in reading it, they should. No, I've done a bunch of them, and Kelly, honestly, they do really well with the readers, and we've done it a couple of different ways. Like we've done a couple of them where I've projected the protected list for the teams, and then made the selections, and then we've done some where our correspondents in the various cities file a protected list. I'm assuming they're getting input from general managers or other sources in the organization, and then I pick the team. So that's what I did the last time. And so in the case of Calgary, Scott Cruikshank filed the protected list, and Sam Bennett was my choice for Seattle, because the Flames will likely adopt that 7-3-1 protocol in terms of protecting people. And you know, that seventh forward is tricky because you have, Dubé, Andrew Mangiapane. I mean, things can change in 10 months, but it's getting closer, right? So it was a real theoretical exercise 2.5 years ago. It's less of a theoretical exercise right now. But it ended up with a pretty good team, because several of the correspondents left very high profile players available for me. And I was very happy to scoop up Brent Burns, very happy to scoop up TJ Oshie, who's from the Pacific Northwest. I got really good goaltending. I mean, Pittsburgh's in a bit of a goaltending quandary. Tristan Jarry and Matt Murray, our correspondent, left me Matt Murray. I'll take them. So, but I think what you'll find they've started doing their own mock drafts. I know Vegas, because I talked to George McPhee about that, did them about once a month in the 6 months leading up to their actual selection process. But the most important time is going to be much closer to, May and June of next year. So we'll have another full NHL season playing out. There will be players that develop. There will be players that fall back. And these protected lists are going to be completely fluid over that period of time. But the Seattle people know that. Like I said, I've talked to Ron Francis about it. I said, are you looking at my mock drafts? And he's laughing. He goes, yeah, we look at them. they're going to get good players. And the other thing is, a lot of people have been wondering, okay, so Vegas did okay in the expansion draft. But honestly, Kelly, where they really benefited was those side deals that they made with Columbus, with the Islanders, with Florida. That's how you get Jonathan Marchessault. That's how you get William Karlsson. That's how you get Riley Smith. These guys weren't, these were the product of the deals that they made, because, Florida wanted to protect a fourth defenseman, and Columbus wanted to protect Josh Anderson, and everybody had, something that they wanted to do, and they were prepared to give Vegas something tangible in order, for them not to lose a particular player. So that worked out really well for Vegas. Now, lots of people are saying, okay, once burn, twice shy, but I think Seattle is still going to be able to make those kind of advantageous trades, because there's going to be teams that are trying to dump money, and Seattle's going to have a clean financial slate. If you have a clean financial slate like Seattle does, you'll be able to take on somebody's expensive contract, and maybe it's worth your while to give up a first round pick or a second round pick or a prospect to get out from an untenable contract. Yeah. So I think that there'll be an awful lot of machinations similar to what happened in Vegas, when Seattle gets closer to the starting line. And I know if you look back at the criticism of Ron Francis in his time as the Carolina general manager, the one thing that came up pretty frequently was that he was too conservative, that he was just, too cautious. I don't think that's going to be the case in Seattle. He was working for an ownership group at the time that was on a very strict budget, so his hands were tied a little bit financially, and I think that contributed to the sort of the operating philosophy in Carolina. That is not the case in Seattle. That's a well-heeled ownership. They're going to be given the financial resources to get good as quickly as they can. And I think they're prepared to use them. So I think it's a very exciting time, because, Vegas disrupted everything in the National Hockey League when they came in. I think Seattle's capable of doing the same.
Well, exactly. And the bar's pretty high, right? So I imagine the owners in Seattle said, if we put all this dough, like, we'd like to have a Golden Knights kind of debut. That would be very, very cool for the people in the
Pacific. Yeah, well, okay. Stanley Cup final for the Seattle Kraken in the first year. If that's the expectation, I don't know.
When I can fly to Las Vegas, maybe I'll take one of those long shot things. You never know, right? You know?
Well, it would have paid off if you'd done it the last time.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Okay, Eric, I knew Seattle was the big news for sure today. Tuesday, we are for sure going to talk about, playoff drafts and that kind of stuff, because people are really starting to talk about that now and who they load up on and all that kind of stuff. So maybe we'll pick your brain on Tuesday about that.
Well, you know what? I'll even be able to give you some updates, because Burnside's running his on Sunday night, and I've already started doing my list. So,
I might
be able to give you an update about how the members of the Professional Hockey Writers Association did in theirs, because we've got a four-hour Zoom call scheduled for Sunday night.
So. There you go. All right. Okay, thanks so much. We will talk on Tuesday.
All right, thank you.
There we go. Eric Tkachuk, one of our NHL insiders right here on Sportsnet 960, the Fan, Seattle Kraken. The team, Eric likes the team name, Lubo not so much. I like the logo and the colors and the scheme and the tribute to the Seattle area and that kind of stuff. I think it's cool, and I think a city that size with that many huge corporations there is going to do incredibly well, and no competition with the NBA. So you got the Winters all to yourself for now, and that new arena, the new old arena that's been redone, it's going to be essentially a brand new place. That is going to be something. That is going to be a destination for people and free agents and stuff, Seattle, because it's just going to be. And it's going to be neat. 32 teams, way more workable number, right? We're going to take a break and hear from the Flames GM as he joined the guys earlier today as we get ready for the Flames heading into the bubble coming up on Sunday. We'll do that next right here on Hockey Central at Noon, Sportsnet 960.
Hockey Central at Noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Kelly Kirsch making way for Peter Klein in Hour 1 of Pinder and Steinberg today. Don't forget, we have Blue Jays baseball for you tomorrow. The season opener in Tampa Bay, as the Blue Jays, they haven't found a home city yet, but that's okay. They're starting on the road, and we'll have that entire series for you right here on Sportsnet 960. But 4:30 first pitch or so coming up tomorrow from Tampa. And then Saturday, Sunday, we'll have those games for you as well. As the Blue Jays roll along in this 60-game season, man, this is going to be interesting. A real, real sprint. Okay, we had the Flames general manager, always great with his time and very generous with his time here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. We had the guys ask him some questions. So the first thing they asked Brad was, tell us how you thought the conditioning of the guys when you saw them actually hit the ice at training camp.
I was really, really impressed. And you don't know, because of the circumstances are different. A normal training camp, the players are in such good shape now that camp, you just go right into camp. It's not about getting people into shape. This situation, because, everybody was a little bit different in terms of what they had access to. So when we entered the pause here, everybody was here for a period of time. So we've outfitted everybody's apartment or house, if they needed it, with gym equipment from our gym equipment at the Saddle Dome. So then as guys started leaving, and again, different places had different things open. A lot of guys had home gyms. We sent everybody a set of Mars blades, sort of the roller blades. But you're hopeful. I know Ryan Van Aston stayed in touch with everybody, but when you see the whites of their eyes and they come back and everybody's in excellent condition, and then it sort of lends itself to jumping into being in a fairly good pace right off the start of camp. It's, the message we used, and we sort of talked to our guys weekly. If we didn't talk, whenever we weren't talking to them individually, we did a weekly call with the group over the pause. And one of the things that we kept hammering home is, we believe, we're going to play at some point. And if we do, regardless of how long camp is, if you haven't done anything over the pause, you're never going to catch up. So, the team that ultimately has success here, I think there's going to be a lot of factors at play. but conditioning is probably going to be out near the top of the list.
We played a clip this morning earlier from Paul Maurice as to what he, a Jets head coach, as to where he on the evaluation and the importance scale of scrimmages. You guys have had a couple. You'll mix in another one here before your game against Edmonton. Just because habits can sometimes bad habits can be formed. What are you looking to get out of it? Is it strictly a let's get in shape, let's get some tempo, or is it more of how much evaluation, I guess, are you drawing from it?
Well, there's not necessarily a whole lot of evaluation. I mean, this idea that we're you know breaking out the scouting books and figuring out who everybody is during a scrimmage is a little bit incorrect. We know who the players are. The idea of scrimmaging is, and I think you got to be careful how you do it, because the problem with scrimmaging with the numbers that we have is you're limited to three line. As things start to ramp up, you're sort of going on every third rotation, and so your pace can drop. And what you don't want to be doing is doing stuff at a low pace for any length of time. What we do the scrimmaging for is it's the best way to replicate game. And it's not, you know, what people think is, well, it's to get people in shape. It's not. You replicating people coming at you, being in small spaces with no time, going back for a puck with pressure on you, all the game-like situations. Now, we replicate those in practice, and I think there's a lot of five-on-five in-zone play that we do. But just getting those reps where, you know, the different game-like situations, coming around the net and looking up. Well, when you haven't played for a while, all you see is, you know, legs, shin pads, and rear ends. And, you know, you don't see seams where you can make a play. So it's sort of getting that live action back to simulate as much game condition as you can. But we've really tried to do certain things with it in terms of the time. You know, I think we've been playing at 16-minute periods just to keep the game-like intensity, game-like pace as we possibly can. We're going to do one or two more before we're done here. But there's also been a lot of stuff in practice that simulates games. So, but it's certainly not to sit here and try to pick the team and you're not scouting it like you don't know who any of the players are.
We're chatting with Flames general manager Brad Treliving here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Ryan Pinder.
Brad, what have you seen in terms of, crispness versus sloppiness as you've gone from scrimmage one to scrimmage two, and how much further do you have to go to get to game one against the Jets? And then, I guess, as a follow-up, what kind of hockey are you expecting to see in round one? Are teams going to be able to play airtight? Are you expecting sloppy, high-scoring affairs? Where are you at on the brand of hockey we've seen and we're going to see?
Yeah, it's a good question, Ryan. I would say I think we've built each day. I mean, coming in, part of the, you know, our and I give the coaches all the credit. They had a plan. You know, they've been working on camp for 4 months, so you knew this thing was going to be dialed in. They've been banging away at this for a while. So they've had a plan of what they're trying to accomplish, not only just daily, but how it all fits together over the 12 or 14 days that we've got. What I would tell you is I've been impressed that we've been able to improve, and that's sort of been our mantra here, is getting a better every day. You know, as much as some guys have been skating, we have a lot of guys here in phase two. So I think that did put us ahead of the curve a little bit. Even with, you know, our plan all along was to adjust or to have two teams. We had to do a little bit of adjustment at the end based upon, as it's been well reported, some of the situation we were facing. It didn't really put us back much. We were planning to do two teams. One was a little bit shorter or smaller than we would have hoped, but they got lots of reps in. That first week was really just to get up and moving. And I think from a scrimmaging standpoint, not just the inter-squad games, but when we've done a lot of the five-on-five work in practice, you can see it gets better every day. Early on, it's tough. Guys haven't, you can skate around all you want and do skill drills and do all this, but when you get into game-like action, what I found was it was fairly crisp, but it fell off a cliff real quick. You know, the pace fell off, habits fell off, and that's not unusual. For what we're expecting, I don't know. I mean, that's a good, I've talked and thought and looked at this a lot. I think, you know, we still have some time here that every team's going to maximize. And I think, you know, each day they're getting a little bit back more to where they would normally be. So I don't necessarily think it's going to be, you know, the hockey itself is going to be far off, but it's not going to be airtight. It's not, as much as you wanted to think that it's going to look exactly like, and I think from the outside it'll look like it would have normally in playoffs, there's going to be holes in it. You know, that's always the debate. What's better, you know, who's ahead in April, pitchers or catchers, or pitchers or hitters? You know, there's going to be some holes. The trick is to try to limit things as much as we possibly can, and the ability to defend, I think, is going to never be as more important as it will be in this tournament. So I like how we've built each day. I like that we've progressed each day, but still we got some steps to take before we start on the first.
There you go. That's Flames general manager Brad Tree Living from the morning show earlier today. That will do it for Hockey Central at Noon. Peter Klein kicks off Pinder and Steinberg next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.